So we've been working on this series through Lent, and we started the first week talking about love God, and then we talked about the second week, how do we love ourselves in a way that God loves us, and then the third week we talked about loving others, which was last week, and this week we're talking about loving creation. So Chris Schaffner is the one who had this series idea and kind of mapped out some of the weeks, and this isn't probably the place I would have chosen, but I'm really excited we are. I think, to the best of my knowledge, I've never done a sermon on this topic. It's been a part of other sermons. I've done little pieces of like an application might be how we treat the environment, but I've never done a talk on just what does it mean as Christians to love the creation. So we're going to do that this morning, and I want to start here. I know some of you really, really love your pets. How many pet lovers? Wow, a lot. How many of you are strictly cat people? Yeah, mark them. All right, dog people. More dogs than cats, as it should be. How about, who's both? Yeah, Aunt Karen's both. All right, yeah. So what makes us different than our pets? What is it about human beings that's different than our pets? Logic? There's logic to pets. Thumbs. What else? We're bipedal. Fingers, okay. What else?
Language.
Okay. Pets don't lie. That's true.
Dogs love us more than we love them.
Dogs love us more than we love them. Science Mike says so. Lifespan. What he said, for those of you that didn't hear, for those of you out there, is most of us, was the qualifier, are slightly less hairy, says the guy with the very long beard. Pets love unconditionally and they don't judge. I think so.
I have a cat.
She doesn't have a cat. That's amazing. Anything else? Our spirits. Oh, did you say that? Yeah. Very good. Our spirits. They know when to rest. Yeah, they do. We're not so good at that. Yeah. Most of them don't work unless we make them. So I want you to turn to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1, we'll start at the beginning. Because what I wanted to get to this morning when we start talking about creation is I think we need to start with how the creation comes to us in the story. So Genesis chapter 1, and I'm going to start at verse 24, and I'm going to be reading out of the Message. God spoke, earth, generate life, every sort of kind, cattle and reptiles and wild animals, all kinds. And there it was, wild animals of every kind. Cattle of all kinds, every sort of reptile and bug, God saw that it was good. And God spoke, let us make human beings in our image, make them reflecting our nature so they can be responsible for the fish in the sea, the birds in the air, their cattle, and yes, earth itself and every animal that moves on the face of the earth. God created human beings. He created them godlike, reflecting God's nature. He created them male and female, and God blessed them. Prosper and produce, reproduce, fill earth, take charge, be responsible for fish in the sea and birds in the air, for every living thing that moves on the face of the earth. So let me ask the question again. What is different about us and the animals? We have this responsibility. It's scripturally and biblically, if we're going to think through what's different between us and the animals, is that we have a responsibility to take care of them. I love how the Message does that language of take responsibility. It's said in different ways. And what I wanted to do to start this morning, and I'm really excited where we're going to get. Some of you came in late and saw where this message is going to go, and it's exciting. But I wanted to start by establishing maybe a little bit of the Christian case for environmentalism. The Christian, like, what are the ideas? How, as Christians, do we get there? Because some of us might, if I ask, like, how many of you consider yourself environmentalists, I would guess in this crowd, a lot of you already do. But what I'm interested in is that when I was growing up, in the Christian context I grew up in, nobody was talking about this idea at all. Nobody was talking about how, as a Christian, I have a responsibility, a God-given responsibility, to take care of the planet, to take care of the creation. Nobody was talking about that. And so what I wanted to do this morning is just start by giving us a couple threads that if somebody were to say to you, like, what did the pastor talk about today at church? And you said, the environment. And that person said, like, why would a pastor talk about the environment? You could say, well, there's three strands to the Christian environmentalist argument. And if you did all that, I would be so proud and so excited, and that's totally unrealistic, but let's do it anyway. So the first one is this language of what we just talked about. The King James here talks about dominion. Some translations use the word authority. I like how the Message says responsibility, that we have a responsibility for the animals, for the creation, to take care of it well. This is funny how this kind of stuff works. So we've had this in the can since December, I think, planned out. And I was working on this throughout the week. And then Thursday or Friday, I was trying to catch up on some podcasts. And I was listening to a podcast, and I just happened to get to the next one in the queue. And it was the Robcast, episode 185. The title's awesome, isn't it? The guy's name is Levi Gardner, the gardener. His name isn't the gardener. It's just Levi Gardner. And Levi Gardner is this guy, and as best as I understand it, he runs this this nonprofit called Urban. Do you remember? Urban something. Urban Plot? Urban... you can find it yourself. His name's Levi Gardner, and he runs a nonprofit in Grand Rapids. And the idea of this nonprofit is they have this land that's been given to them by a developer, just about 3/4 of an acre in Grand Rapids. And they're really into, like, how do we grow our own food? And how do we teach kids how to grow food? And how do we help develop a connection between these kids in the city and the food that they eat, and help them see that we're all deeply connected to the soil? And so this podcast, I'm just telling you, if this topic kind of starts getting your gears going, you want to, like, look this up and listen to it, because it was so good and so many ideas. And I found myself yesterday thinking, like, man, I should just shut up and play the podcast for you all. But that's not what happened. I'm sorry. But out of that, one of the ideas I loved is that this top word, do you guys know the top word, oikos? Anybody know what it is? Household. It's, what's that?
Yogurt.
Is it? It is a brand of yogurt, but I'm just wondering why. So the word, we are squirrely this morning, and I like it. I think we should all come to church on a lot less sleep all the time. The word means home or household. So now that I'm thinking about that, it is a strange name for a yogurt. Even if it is Greek yogurt. You can't just slap any Greek word on it and call it Greek yogurt. Apparently you can. So the word oikos is, what's interesting about that is that it's the same root word that we get oikos, house or household, is where we get the word ecology. And so they talked about this idea of dominion or authority or responsibility for the earth being this idea of how do we take care of the household? How do we manage our household? So I'm going to guess that in this room, you have rules for how you manage the household. We have rules that say things like, you know, when you get a dish out and you use it, you put it in the dishwasher, right? We have rules that say when you come into the house and you take off your shoes in the doorway, pick up your own shoes is how we say it often, right? Because we have rules for how the household is managed. We need those rules. And you all have those rules too, don't you?
Yep.
Courtney. Oh, I love it. And so this idea of dominion, this idea of authority, or this idea of responsibility is that one. Think about how you are going to manage the place. What does it look like? What is that going to look like? How are you going to take care of those things? So you can't just harvest all the fish out of the ocean because then there's no fish. So how do you harvest the fish well? One of the things I love... I don't know if you guys know much about this, but I grew up, my uncle is a taxidermist out in Glassford and an avid hunter, and so I learned lots of stuff from him when growing up, but the Department of Natural Resources in Illinois, they work every year to look at the deer population. Do you all know this? And then when they issue hunting tags, they issue hunting tags according to the population of the deer because they're trying to manage the deer population. Because if the deer population gets too high, then we all hit them with our cars and they eat all the crops and it's bad. But if the population gets too low, nobody wants the deer population to get too low either, right? And so they're always trying to manage that. So they issue hunting permits based on how do we manage the population well. And you may agree or disagree. I don't know. Maybe you have deep thoughts about how the IDNR does the deer population thing. I don't know. I would guess in this room probably not. But the idea is what they're trying to do in those spaces is they're trying to maintain the house. How do we maintain the house well so that deer will be here for generations and we don't harvest them all, right? And so that's this idea that somehow rooted in the creation, we have this responsibility to tend to the house. How many of you garden? At least in any way, shape, or form, right? So I have two, like, we have like three gardens. One is an herb garden up on our deck, and then we have two gardens that are five or six feet wide and about 16 feet long. And I keep thinking all the time about how do we maintain those spaces, right? And I have rules for that. Like, nobody steps in my garden, ever. No footprints in the garden. Don't compact the soil. And we throw things in there, right? Like, good things. Like, if we can throw, like, food scraps in there, we do. And last fall, I was asking people, forgive me all the leaves you've got, because I was just dumping leaves on top of, like, right? I'm managing my space. I'm thinking about how do I maintain the space so that when I plant things this spring, they'll grow well, right? So that's this idea, and it's just one of the threads. A second thread is that creation serves as an expression of God. And I want you to turn to Psalm 19. It's one of my very favorite psalms, and I've probably quoted it in here many times over the years. So the list of psalms down here at the bottom, 8, 29, 65, 104, 139, and 19, these psalms are known as the creation psalms. Now, the Psalms have the creation stuff written all over them, all throughout the Psalms. We see reflections on creation. But these eight, one, two, three, four, five, and by eight, I mean six. These six really hammer down on creation. And so I want to start in Psalm 19 and give you a flavor. Here it goes. God's glory is on tour in the skies, God's craft on exhibit across the horizon. Madam Day holds classes every morning, Professor Knight lectures each evening. Their words aren't heard, their voices aren't recorded, but their silence fills the earth. Unspoken truth is everywhere. I'll just stop there. You can read all of this later because it's magnificent. What's the central idea here about creation in Psalm 19? It's on the screen. Yeah. It reflects God. That when we think about the creation is a space that should cause us to reflect on how great God is. The idea here is that creation is a gift, but it's also a gift that is an expression of God. And if it's an expression of God, then it starts causing us to think, like, how should we treat that? So when I was a kid, in the churches I grew up in, the sanctuary, this room, was seen as like an expression of God. Like, it was not to the same degree, but it was a solemn place. How many of you grew up in a tradition like that? Like, the sanctuary where we gather is a place we talk in hushed tones. We don't run around the sanctuary. We don't climb over the pews in the sanctuary. Like, right? Like, that was the church I grew up in. Like, my dad would have freaked out if I did that on a Sunday morning, especially during church, but even after church. Or as fun as it is, rolling underneath the pews was not okay. And so when I was a youth pastor and I would do all-night lock-ins and allow my youths playing sardines to run through the sanctuary at night and roll under the pews and all that stuff, it tends to get one in trouble with the bosses when you do those kinds of things, because the sanctuary at some level was seen as an expression of God, and so you treat it in a particular way. In the same way, what these psalms are saying, and part of this strand of Christian environmentalism, is that the creation itself is an expression of God. And so how we treat that creation matters in terms of our worship of God. Does that make sense? You see that thread? And I should say, every one of these first three slides could be like a long sermon, but I just want to give you a taste of where Christian theology gets to environmentalism. And then the third one is a little bit more obscure, and it's just this. It's just the historical Jesus. And I didn't know what specific passage to put, but I just wanted to say that when we look at the life of Jesus, Jesus' life and his teaching are deeply entwined in the creation. We see him referring to seeds and plants, and we see him going into the desert and eating fish and all these things where Jesus' life is really intertwined. And some of that has to do with being a first century rural, you know, peasant wandering preacher kind of guy. But we see Jesus' life reflected in this idea that he's intimate with the creation. And I think that's because of the first two, that Jesus probably had a decent theology of dominion or authority, and Jesus probably had a pretty good understanding of the Psalms. And by pretty good, again, facetious, right? So those three things, when I think through, like, what does it mean to be a Christian environmentalist, those are the three things that just come to my mind. Like, oh, that's why I can proudly say, like, I'm a follower of Jesus, and I really believe in caring for the environment. And I see no contradiction in those two things. And I know in some faith traditions they have problems with that. But those three strands are, for me, like, iron tight. Like, no big deal, okay? And I know for many of you in the room, like, this feels like elementary stuff, but I feel like we needed to get that base because I want to ask a question. To me, it seems super clear from Scripture about how important the creation is. The question I have is, why is it then so difficult? Why is it so hard when we start talking about this stuff? Why is the environment an issue? There's been very few meetings in 10 years of the church that we've argued in our leadership team over. One of those was we got in a discussion about the environment. This is like 9 years ago. Probably one of the more tense meetings we've had in our history as a church, and people, like, not yelling, but talking loudly and intensely, right? Like, it got really intense about this. So why is this so hard? And you don't have to be super personal, but why is it hard for you, or why is it hard, do you think, in the broader Christian context to have conversations about Christians loving the environment? Because we're lazy? Okay. Okay, so maybe it has something to do with our own greed and the unequal distribution of resources. Danny?
It's a politicized issue that both the left and the right have
So it's a politicized issue, and what I think Danny's saying, and if he's not, I'll take the responsibility for it, is sometimes we put our politics above our theology, and our political affiliations cause us to lean away, and we haven't been reflective of what's our theology about the issue. And I just want to say, I'm not pointing fingers at anybody. We've all done this at points in our lives, where we have, I feel like that was one of the things in my own development as a pastor. My mentor in seminary would always ask me, whatever we were talking about, so reflect on that theologically. What you just said there, I want you to think theologically about that, not just pragmatically or whatever works for you. I want you to think about what's a God's eye view of this, or how would Jesus have thought about this? And to really challenge me to think about issues from a theological place first before I jump in with my political bent. Does that make sense? And that sometimes we are, all of us at different points, left and right, guilty of jumping to, here's what I think or I feel or my group or whatever, without doing the hard work of saying, but let me first reflect on this from God's view. How might God think about this issue? Good.
I think as we move from rural, agrarian type society into cities, we become more and more disconnected from the sources of the things that we consume.
Yes.
And the impact of the waste that we produce.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm going to come to that in just a minute. Justin says, as we've become more urban and less agrarian, we've become less aware of where stuff comes from and then where our waste goes. Good. Vicky?
Well, I think that bad eschatology allowed that to happen.
Bad eschatology, yeah.
The world's going to burn, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so what Vicky just said is bad eschatology. Now, if that doesn't mean anything to you, let me unpack that just briefly. In some Christian contexts, this idea that Jesus is coming back any day soon, God's going to burn up the whole planet, who cares? We don't really need to worry about it. God's going to destroy it all anyway. How many of you grew up with some flavor of that? I'm just curious. Yeah, so about a third of us in here, a quarter to a third of us, grew up with some kind of theology that said something pretty close to that. If not that blatant, at least suggested that. One or two more. Why is this tough for us? Yeah.
There's such a high premium on the value of humans that everything else is secondary to that.
Okay. Yes.
I'm about saving the world. By world, I mean humans.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. We tend to think about humans first and creation second. Good. Courtney.
So I grew up with such a different spin on this. I grew up in Northern California, and
Yes.
If we are breaking our world, why not be tending to our world?
Yeah, but you Californians are all weirdos, so. Left coaster! Yeah. Right. Right. Well, that's good.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, you're wondering why we're talking about this, right? Yeah. Good. Yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah, there's something about the environment doesn't have a face, which just inspired a whole crew over here. I've been favoring this side. Does anybody over here have anything to say? All right, come back over here. I got to watch the clock, so one or two more. Yeah, Matt. It's inconvenient. Yeah. Yeah, almost like we might know the right things to do, but it's just, it's a pain to do. Yeah. It's like this. It's like this. Like, I know the right thing to do when I finish a jar of peanut butter is to put it in recycling. But have you ever tried to get a peanut butter jar clean enough to put in the recycling?
Yes.
Peanut butter jars, I'm just telling you, 50-50 on this one, right? And we recycle pretty well in our house. And I'm going to get in trouble when I get home. But when it comes to the end of the peanut butter jar, whoo, it's really inconvenient. And often it goes in the trash. Yeah. Yeah. So there's some systemic things, right? So there's some personal choices, and we're going to talk about those in just a minute. I will hit you last. You're going to be my last one, all right? There's some personal choices, but there's also some systemic things. Like, I know for us, all of us that live in Peoria, recycling comes once a month. I'm telling you, for a family of six, we actually bought two bins, and they are overflowing after a month. Two bins full, right? Because once a month doesn't cut it if you're really going to recycle. I mean, come on. Like, so there's some systemic things that we might have to do to get there. Yeah. It feels like my contributions to the problem are so small, right? And it's easy to think, like, the planet is so big, and I'm so small, right? Like, and if you travel at all, like, you start getting this sense. Like, if you fly to the West Coast, there's a lot of country out there. What are they talking about crowding, right? And so it's easy to, like, convince ourselves in that moment when I'm standing there with a peanut butter jar, like, what does it matter if I throw this one peanut butter jar in the trash today? It doesn't matter. And yeah, Laura, and then.
Kind of tying in what you say about packaging, there's also, like, a cost issue that comes in.
Yes. Yeah, or let's switch topics. I like the clothes we wear. I've been in Cambodia. I've talked to garment workers. I've been in their homes where eight people share a single room apartment. I've been there, and it's still a lot cheaper to go to Old Navy and buy stuff that was probably done there, right? So there's that contradiction of, like, oh, but we're trying to be responsible with our money, but it would cost a lot more, like, all those conflicting values. Okay, one last one. Yeah. Becky said she posted something on Facebook, which I'm sure you can go to her page and see it, about a store that is packaging in cellulose. So there's these options, and what's happening, what I think it's really exciting these days, is we're starting to see some of these options where it's like, you can do this or you can do this, and it's the same cost. Well, duh. Like, yes, let's do the one that's cheaper. Good. I think you guys have said this. I don't even know that I need to preach it that close, that much. But I think, for me, the challenge is just this. It asked me to extend mindfulness from myself to the whole world. I think that an essential part of the Christian journey, and you've heard me say this, of spiritual formation, is it's a growing sense of the self. I've used the quote before, you know, to love God, to know God is to know the self, and to know the self is to know God, that there's this symbiotic relationship in that thing. And that part of me growing in my own spiritual maturity is understanding who I am and being aware of myself. And I feel like I work at this, right? I work at, okay, how am I going to be with my wife and with my kids and friends and church and who am I and what are my tendencies and what are my inclinations to sin and all these things. And I'm trying to be aware and I'm trying to be mindful of me. The challenge for the environment, and you guys have said this on a lot of levels, is that it challenges me to be mindful about people over there that I don't see that may not have a face. I really like that they don't have a face necessarily. The problem is faceless and it's over there, so it's easy to not be mindful about that. And so Chris Schaffner and I were having coffee the other day, and I was telling him what I was going to say and working it through with him, and we were saying, like, and so then immediately when I say that, then some of you I know already felt this weight of, like, oh my gosh, now I have to feel guilty about everything I do. We were having coffee at the time, and like, where did this coffee come from? And how much did it cost? And who had to produce it? And where does the waste, where do the grounds go? And all these like, oh my gosh, as soon as you open up that Pandora's box, now I can never just eat a cheeseburger, right? Like, it's just really, really hard. And so I want to come back to that in a minute, but I think this is the challenge for us. The way I was thinking this through, actually, and trying to get clear with it, is I started thinking about my sandbox. And I want you to think about your sandbox. My sandbox is, it's where I live. And it's where, by the way, I don't know that I've ever put clip art into a church slideshow, and I was so happy to use clip art, just side note. I work in my sandbox. I go to church in my sandbox. I shop in my sandbox. My kids go to school in the sandbox. So think about your sandbox as everything that you do. What's your orbit? What's your space? For most of us, that's Peoria. Or maybe you air up the tires and fill up the tanks and cross the river and go to Morton once in a while. Maybe that's your sandbox, right? Like, so whatever your sandbox is, and that's fine, but the reality is that in my sandbox then, I consume things in that sandbox, and I also have waste, like Justin said. And what's happened in the modern world is we've gotten disconnected from those things. Like back, if you go back a couple hundred years ago and we lived on a farm, we knew where our food came from. It came from the fields that we grew, and the meat came from the woods that we hunted. It came from our land. And the garbage that we produced, it stayed on our land. I grew up out in Glassford, and so many farms out in that in rural Peoria County, you can find a spot on the farm that's full of rusty old farm equipment because you don't just take your waste and put it on your neighbor's yard, right? And so what do you do with a farm tractor when it's all rusty and no good anymore? You stick it back in that one part, and it becomes a haven for bees. Life lessons learned as a kid, right? And so what happens in this whole system is that then we create all kinds of waste, and sometimes we don't even see our waste. So your car needs its oil changed every 5,000 miles or so. So most of us will go through 3-4 oil changes a year. Each of those oil changes is about 5 quarts of oil. So each of us per car that we have in our household is responsible for about 15 quarts of oil. And if I said to you right now, okay, so here's your 15 quarts of oil, you have to dispose of it in your sandbox, your spot. And really, what if, I mean, to make this even more powerful, what if I said to you, no, literally, you have to dispose of this oil on your property? How many of you are excited about that? None of us wants to dispose of 15 quarts of oil per year on our property because I have a garden on my property. Like, I don't want that getting in my garden, and I don't want that polluting up my yard, and I don't want to have a dead spot in my yard where I keep dumping the oil. So that feels really awkward. So then I have a choice, right? And that choice usually gets us to thinking about, well, I don't want to put it here, so let's put it somewhere else. Let's put it in somebody else's sandbox. And so what happens, and this is, I know it's at a big global level, but what happens then is actually this is more complicated because we say about our resources, boy, my little sandbox can't get all the things I want or deserve or need. So I need stuff from these other sandboxes, and I sure don't want the trash when I'm done, so I'm going to give them back the trash. And this is what's happening. At a really overly simplistic level, this is what's happening all over the world all the time. And so Christian environmentalism and thinking about the planet as a place where I have to think about how to maintain the house is a really complicated endeavor to where I start thinking about, well, what am I consuming, and then what is the garbage that I produce, and what's happening to all those? And we could just move from food to clothing to oil to you name it. And I'll get political for a second. Any kind of thinking that says America first sure sounds like we're just going to take all the good stuff from all those other sandboxes and give them all our garbage and we're going to be proud of it. And that's, to me, as a Christian, that's not okay. That's not a way to live in a Christian kind of way, as a Christian response to our environment is not to say, us first, screw y'all. And so it challenges how I think. And so what I want to say is like that, Chris and I were acknowledging Friday at coffee, that feels really, really overwhelming right now. Jennifer, how do we even begin to talk about our clothes and our coffee and our oil and all of that in one conversation and figure out what it means? So it made me think about this worldwide bestseller called Baby Steps by Dr. Leo Marvin. And in his groundbreaking work, he taught us that you just baby step your way to the elevator. And whatever it is that you have to do today to think about baby steps, you take a baby step. I'm sad that only about 4 of you in the whole room know that this is a joke. Really? Will you enlighten somebody? This is from the 1980s movie, What About Bob? Dr. Leo Marvin, his book, Baby Steps. Gosh, I thought this was going to be a killer. Dang it. I worked hard to set that up even. Thank you. I felt like it was, I thought like it was comedic gold. Beth thought it was funny too, so we're good. All right. All joking aside, can I tie this week back to last week? Last week what I said is when it comes to loving others, what do we have to do first? We have to see them. And I encouraged you in that to pay attention to the Holy Spirit in all this. What's the next right thing for me to do? And what I hope out of this morning is, one, that you start, for some of you, for Courtney, this is how she was raised, and that's awesome. But for some of the rest of you, that you maybe start saying like, oh, that environmental thing I feel, boy, that's Christian. I don't have to see that as separate from my faith. No, it's a part of my faith. And then I hope that what maybe you can start to do is to start to ask questions about one thing. And I joke, but really is baby steps. What is one thing we want to do differently? And so Jennifer is really the one who leads our family in a lot of this stuff. And so we've started this over the years. There was a time where we didn't recycle, right? And originally, when we lived out near Brimfield, we didn't know, there was no recycling, like what you guys said, like no recycling at all. And so she would like collect stuff and drive it to the recycling center for a while. And then we were all excited that we had everything. I think it was every other week when we got it out there, so we could do one can. And then we moved into Peoria, and then we had to get 2 cans, and so we're doing that. And we're constantly having conversations about, okay, so what's the next thing? You know, I mean, Jennifer and I have switched to almond milk, not because of any health things, but mostly because I think it's better for the environment. And I'm probably wrong, but we'll baby step our way into it. We'll find out later, right? And we'll just keep responding as we find out, like, oh, this is another step we can take. Oh, this is another thing we can do. This is, oh, we've started doing Salad Tuesdays. It's really popular with the kids, let me tell you. But We eat salads on Tuesday nights. I love it. We're really excited about this, and it's reasons our kids will end up in therapy. But but you have to respond in whatever way that God is asking you to respond. So there's a person in our church, Jessica. Why don't you go ahead and start coming up here, and I'm going to clear a seat for you. I'm going to let you sit in this one because I think this one's more stable. This one's going to collapse one day, and it's going to hurt. But So I want Jessica to tell you about her journey, and I'm going to ask her a couple questions, and then, I'm not going to say anymore. So I'm going to put up this picture, and I'm going to explain this picture after you talk for a little while, because that's the text I sent you in January. Yeah. So it's really funny. So tell us how you ended up in Costa Rica.
I was doing a really big mural. So I started Googling sea turtle conservation and found a trip in Costa Rica and went to Costa Rica for 3 weeks to work with sea turtles.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Because as one does.
Yes, as one does. I'm just.
Yeah. So you went there to work.
Yes.
So tell us what was the work?
So you go, you live with family. They tell you, or they told me that I didn't need to know much Spanish. That was not true at all. I ended up living in a town of 300 people where it's not a tourist destination. No one really spoke English. So I lived with a family. So it was complete cultural immersion. And then the biological research station that we did the work at was like about a half mile away. So you always walked to work. And we did night patrols where you would walk on the beach at night looking for green sea turtles and leatherback turtles because poaching is really high. So you're kind of deterring poaching. But also if you find those turtles, you have to collect their eggs and put them in a hatchery so that they have a better chance of survival. But also in Osceola, which is where I stay, it's one of 5 beaches in the world where they have an event called Arribada, which is the arrival. And that's hundreds of thousands of turtles at once on the beach over a period of like 4 or 5 days laying eggs. And during that time, we would actually tag turtles, count their eggs, measure their flippers, measure their shell, and also as the turtles were hatching from the previous arribada, making sure that they were making it to the ocean. We also did beach cleanups, debris cleanups.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's I saw a video somewhere, because you couldn't take pictures.
We couldn't take pictures of the volunteer work because you want to make sure the tourists don't think that they can do it.
Ka-ching. But I saw a video somewhere that was... Did somebody on your team shoot a video?
Was it trash? Or was it...
No, I thought it was turtles.
Did I show it to you in person?
Maybe. Okay, so what surprised you? So you went to work with turtles, and I think you walked away surprised by?
Garbage.
So talk about the garbage.
So I think this is pretty common with American tourism, is that when we go to the beach, we go to a hotel, we go to the beach, we lay out on the beach, we go to the ocean, it's really clean, it's really nice. And so I go to this beach, Toronto Wildlife Refuge, it's not a tourist beach, and garbage everywhere. Like, everywhere. And we did beach cleanups, and what I was struck by was that all the volunteers were kind of going for the big garbage, but it's all the little garbage that you can't really pick up. It's everywhere. And it's really brightly colored. I love bright colors. I'm like, oh, it's pretty garbage.
So just to be clear, when we all go to a resort, what happens is at 5 a.m., 6 a.m., the sun comes up, they clean the beaches. And they actually, I've seen them out, like they actually rake and they make it all really pretty for us. But when you leave a beach to its natural state anywhere in the world, I think it's true anywhere in the world, they get filled with garbage.
And there's not, you couldn't even rate this beach because of all the wildlife that would actually be detrimental. So the wildlife
right.
there that come through would just clean it.
Right.
So yeah, it was, I mean, we've all seen like the videos and the pictures, and I mean, I've probably gotten dozens of videos sent to me since I kind of started my plastic journey.
Yeah.
But it's different when you're there.
Yeah.
When you're actually working with these amazing creatures that are affected like by it. And my husband is really mad about this because he has wanted to see a leatherback sea turtle his entire life. And then I went and I was like, hey. But leatherbacks actually, this fact just it's shocking to me. Leatherbacks on the Pacific side are critically endangered, and their only food source is jellyfish. And in the water, a plastic bag looks exactly like jellyfish. So, and the plastic bags are everywhere.
Yeah.
That just really...
And so the way this gets in the oceans is there's a lot of ways. Some of it is natural disasters, mm-hmm. like when the tsunami or the... Yeah, the tidal wave happened in Japan. It washed a whole town into the ocean. So all that garbage, and they've had it showing up in the West Coast. I know they found things from Japan that have migrated across the ocean and start showing up in Alaska, you know, and things like that. Some of it is just people being really irresponsible. So what happened for you? So talk about your no plastic thing. What was the takeaway then from the trip?
So I started going out on my own debris. I actually brought a bunch of garbage home with me, which was fun when I went through customs. Like, do you have anything to declare? I'm not here for garbage. And the guy was going to use, like, fruit or vegetables. Oh, no, I'm good. No, I'm good. Just garbage.
Just run-of-the-mill garbage.
So, yeah, I brought some home with me, and I thought maybe I would turn it into jewelry or some sort of art thing. I wanted the experience. I didn't want to just go there, have my experience, and just be done with it. I wanted to take something with me that was long-lasting. I don't even know how it started with the reef, but I started building this, like, plastic coral reef from single-use plastics.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
so what's awesome is she brought her exhibit in this morning. So when you go out these doors, you can't miss it. It's very large. When you go out these doors, some of you got here a little late and saw it, but for those of you that got here early, you didn't see it because she was setting it up. When you go out the doors, she has put on display her plastic reef made of garbage. Amazing.
Yeah, and
yeah, and so what's your challenge then?
Like personally, or my challenge to putting out to the world, or?
Both.
So this is a never-ending project, which is kind of sad. It's going to the Clean Water Celebration. I took it to a Girl Scout troop. I'm taking it to Lanier Elementary. I'm really excited about that. I'd like to take it out to lots of schools. But I started this in December, and we made kind of a promise. He's a saint. You don't even know. So we recycle what we can. We compost what we can. Certain waste you have to throw away, but anything you don't have to throw away, we saved all of our garbage. And it's overwhelming. I think you really should throw the garbage that you wouldn't even believe. Plastic wrap, or bags, can recycle, and what do you do with them?
Right.
So they're all being used.
Wow.
But my challenge now is to kind of get people to change their habits as far as single-use plastic. And that is, grocery bags. That's straws. That's the lid on your coffee cup. Your coffee cup. Your to-go coffee cup is actually plastic-coated, even though it's paper. I mean, you have to think about all of these things. When you buy clothing, a lot of it's polyester. Polyester is actually a plastic. Adhesives are a plastic. I mean, hot glue like crazy.
Sure.
And we need plastics. I mean, we do. We just do.
Right.
So it's not, I'm not anti-plastic. I'm responsible plastic.
Yeah.
So
the challenge is if you've been with us, you know that each week during Lent, we try to issue you a challenge to say, how might you live differently 1 week during Lent with the rest of us? And so if you flip over your notes that you were handed when you walked in this morning, you'll see at the bottom, there's some other questions. But the thing we're asking you to try this week is to give up plastic for the week. Can I tell you about the picture up here? She's been talking about this on Facebook. This is on January 3rd or 4th. Jennifer and I were at an eating establishment, a local eating establishment, where they don't ask. They just put a straw in your drink. And I've never been a straw user because I just don't like them. But they automatically give you a straw. So that straw was not used by me and now goes into the trash. And what I love about this picture is this particular eating establishment, the artwork back on this back wall over there is hers. So I sent her a picture. I'm like, look at this in a restaurant that your art is hanging on. So you're working on it though, right?
That restaurant is doing
better. Yeah, I know. I know.
There's actually about three different restaurants in town.
Hey, yes!
Yes. There's about
well
three
done.
Restaurants right now that we've definitely impacted.
Awesome. Awesome. So our challenge to you is this. Here's the baby steps. Is what if this week your family said, how do we, maybe it's just you got to use less this week. Whatever your commitment is, how do we this week start here? Maybe this is a baby step. And maybe this week you are like, hey, we didn't miss it. We can go a step further. I don't know. But I hope this inspires you. She would love to talk to you. I'm going to pray because we need to get to communion. But after the service, Jessica's going to be standing back by her display. Yes, you can, please.
So I'm also counting straws in restaurants in Peoria and collecting discarded straws and collecting research. And in the Peoria area alone, we use a minimum of 35,000 straws a day.
Whoa.
Minimum.
Wait, you're collecting them?
Mm-hmm. I collect used straws from a restaurant. I would rather not collect them because I would rather people don't use them.
Oh, sure. Right. But if we're forced to have one in our glass, we should bring it to you. I was that night. I was forced.
Okay, in that case, bring me your straw.
If you're forced to have a straw, you can bring it to her.
Yes.
I think. All right. Will you? Oh, there's another restaurant. Yes. Why don't you all talk afterwards? Good. Yeah. Is that enough for this morning? All right, let's pray. Will you thank Jessica for sharing? Yeah. Thank you. Let's pray, and then I'm sure somebody's going to get up and lead us into communion. God, this is we see this issue all around us today, and it's become a big deal in our world, and we hear green initiatives everywhere we go. And for some of us, though, this morning might be one of our first steps towards seeing our care for the planet as part of our faith. And as we get there, help us to figure out what the next baby step is, to know what the next thing we ought to do and as an act of faith. And And God, I pray for us as a community of believers this morning, as we do this together this week, help us to encourage each other and spur one another on to love and good works. In your name I pray, amen.